mission is to help the world's best companies manage smooth leadership change through retained search, leadership coaching, and executive career development. You're going to help me with my presentation later, I'm sure. Larry received his doctorate in organizational behavior from Harvard University. Being a Brown grad, I don't hold it against him. But he's also a licensed psychologist, which really impressed me because that's just what gives him the deep insight into people and their behavior. He's a fellow of the Institute for Career Coaching International, and he has written extensively on leadership, careers, and governance in Harvard Business Review, MIT Sloan Management Review, and California Management Review. So I know it's going to be entertaining, it's going to be interactive, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So, Larry, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming here tonight. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Next month is Father's Day, and I know what I know now what I'm getting for Father's Day. I'm going to get 3 free golf lessons. And the reason I know I'm getting it is because that's what I asked for last year, and that's what I asked for the previous year. So my wife has stopped asking, but I know that's what I'm going to get. Now, why do I always ask for golf lessons? Because I'm really not that good a golfer. But at the same time, I play enough golf that I'm starting to develop bad habits, particularly of the basics. So every year, I want a refresher on the basics of putting, the basics of chipping, the basics of driving, so that, and I need a verification from a pro that I haven't slipped into bad habits, because it's too easy for me to do. Bad habits are really easy to do, and they're hard to get out of for me. That's what this evening is all about. We're going to go over some of the basics of something called networking. But I'm going to give you my approach to networking. But I'm going to ask, what kind of networking? And I'm going to give you 2 definitions of networking, and then I'm going to speak to each. The first is, for some of you, and maybe for the majority of you, networking is a verb. And for some of you, a small group of you, networking is an adjective. And I want you, I'll give you the definitions of both, and then just raise your hands about which apply to you. And there's no right answer, no wrong answer. The first is, for you, networking is a verb. A verb means something that you do. I'm talking. I'm pacing. I'm networking. These are verbs. And the implication is, at some point, God willing, I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop pacing. I'm going to stop networking. For you that look at networking as a verb, network is something that you do for some instrumental purpose. It could be because you're looking for a job. It could be also when you're looking to find a contractor for rebuilding your house, or you're looking for a lawyer, or for some other purpose. But when you say networking is a verb, it's something that you do. Now, there's another definition of networking. Networking as an adjective. See, adjective is an attribute about who you are. I'm a large white guy with blue eyes and a gray beard. And tomorrow, I'm going to be a large white guy with white beard and blue eyes. And it doesn't matter what I say, what I do. That's who I am. That's an adjective. Larry is a networker. He doesn't network. It's who he is. He's going to be doing this next week. Jeff is a networker. It's part of who he is. I'm a networker. It's part of who I am. Gorm Brigham is a networker. It's part of who he is. So I'd like you to think about, for you, is networking an adjective or is networking a verb? And again, I'm not asking for a show of hands, but think about it. What is it for you? And then I'm going to talk to the two audience, because these are really two audiences in the room. So first of you, for those of you, for networking is a verb. It's just something you do until you don't need to network anymore. I'm going to give you some key themes. The first is, as Jeff mentioned, we're in the leadership change business, and one of the things that we do is senior executive outplacement. How many of you have worked in an outplacement capacity or been in an outplacement firm? Anybody? Okay, so a lot of people here. So here's the dirty little secret in the outplacement industry. Networking is not as cracked up as it is, as you were told. For a lot of outplacement firms, when they talk about it, it's all about networking. Does it sound familiar? It's a dirty little secret. It's not. Networking is part of a diversified approach to doing a job search. The other components of doing a diversified job search would be responding to recruiters, responding to classified ads, mailing for dollars, doing direct mailing campaigns, driving for dollars, go out and actually visiting companies, and dialing for dollars, an aggressive telemarketing program. One of the reasons, unfortunately, that outplacement firms really focus on networking is it's the cheapest for them to do networking. The reality is that networking is very effective at certain stages of your career and less effective at other stages. It's very effective at the beginning stages of a career when you're young and everybody wants to help a young kid. It's less effective after you're age 50. Networking is very effective when there are more opportunities than there are people. And it's less effective when there are more people than there are opportunities. Am I telling anybody that anything they don't know? The second thing is frequency of networking. Frequency of networking is shaped a little like a soup bowl. For the first 6 weeks, networking is important and it's urgent, and then it starts dropping down. And it stays down, and it stays down, and then it starts coming up towards the end of your job search. Why does it come up? Because when you start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, you start getting energized and wanting to talk to people. So it looks like is it concave or convex? I don't know what it's a soup bowl. And the lip is about 6 weeks. How many can relate to this? And found that was your experience. But 6 weeks, you start dropping. And what happens is networking goes from something, it's important and urgent, to it's important and there's so many other things I need to do in my life. Does that sound familiar to other people? Okay, so here's one implication. I wish I was self-motivated all the time. But there are days I'd rather play golf, and there are days I'd rather sleep, and there are lots of meetings that I have to go to that I'd rather not do. Does this sound familiar? What keeps me going? What keeps things going from important but not urgent to important and urgent? And the answer is an accountability relationship. I know if I miss that boring meeting, I'm responsible to my boss. I know I'm responsible to my wife. That most of us in work settings like to think of ourselves as self-motivated, but we do need an accountability relationship. And if you don't have an accountability relationship, then what happens is something that is important and urgent slips into being important and not urgent. It's important and not urgent that I go on a diet. It's important and not urgent that I take care of myself. Why is Alcoholics Anonymous so successful? Because there's an accountability relationship. What's the secret of Jenny Craig? It's you're going to be weighed every week. Why is leadership coaching effective? Because every week you're going to be talking with somebody about what you did the preceding week. It's about having an accountability relationship. Why is outplacement effective when it's effective? It's not effective when it's a training program. It's not effective when it's training. It's not effective when it's a website. Here's a website and a password. Have a nice life. No, it's effective when there's an accountability relationship. Every week, someone's going to call you and say, what'd you do the last week? So, for those of you in the room, one of the things that you might want to consider is finding an accountability partner. Somebody that you could talk to every week about what you did the preceding week in terms of networking. And the idea is, by having an accountability partner, you take something networking from that is important and not urgent, transform it to important and urgent because I've got a reporting relationship. We all need reporting relationships in our lives. If you don't have one, you need to manufacture one. Any questions? By the way, you can interrupt me at any time. And also, I am taping this conversation. And if anybody would like a copy of this, on an MP3 so you can listen while you're exercising or driving, just give me your business cards or scribble your name on a piece of paper. I'll be glad to send you the MP3. I remember when I was young and first starting out in businesses, there were certain things that just didn't make sense to me until somebody explained it, and then I went, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it didn't make sense at first. I remember the astonishment on my face when I heard that banks don't like to lend money to people who need money. And banks like to lend money to people and companies that don't need the money. And I said, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then somebody explained what banks are in the business to make money. I went, oh yeah, that makes sense. Well, here's another one of these paradoxes of business. Your worst opportunities from a networking point of view will be with people who know you well. And your best opportunities will be with people who do not have a clue who you are. The research on networking suggests the most effective links in the networking chain is the third link in the networking chain. And the only good that the first link, in other words, the people that you know, is to refer you to the second. And the second to the third. Then it starts dropping off when you get to the fourth and the fifth. It's the third link in the networking chain that you want to get to. Now that seems a paradox. It would seem logical that the people who know you well, know what you can do, will be the ones who will help you. And then it turns out they won't. And the people who don't know you at all are the ones who turn around and help you. Has anybody had experienced that? Okay. Can anybody explain why that happens? And why it's predictable that it would happen? Russ?
I think friends very often are either embarrassed or don't quite know how to deal with,
It goes to this, Russ. There's a confusion between the word referral and reference. Now, I know you, Russ. We've known each other for... we were young when we knew. Anyway, you come to me, you're looking for a board role. And I call up a company. I say, you might want to think about Russ. I've known him for a number of years. Well, if Russ gets that board job, and he does a great job, that's a point for me. And Russ is in my debt, and the company's in my debt. That's great. However, suppose Russ screws up, and the company then calls me and says, "Why didn't you tell me about Russ?" Right? I'm putting myself at risk from a reputational point of view when I refer somebody that I know. When you go to somebody that you know, and you ask them for their help, they are at reputational risk if they help you. However, now let's... Russ then refers me Matt. Matt, how long have we known each other?
About 30 seconds.
30 seconds. I don't know Matt at all. But I call my company and I say, look, I was introduced to Matt by somebody I know named Russ. I don't know Matt very well. We just met for about an hour. But I know that you have a board opportunity. At least on paper, Matt looks interesting. You see what I how I've just said it? Yeah. I have qualified it as a referral and made it clear this is not a reference. So if Matt gets the job and he does well, you owe me, company owes me, but if Matt doesn't work out, I'm not going to complain. So that's the secret of the paradox. So when you are networking, don't expect much help from the people that you know. People that you know, you want them to help you to network to people that you don't know. It's the strangers that will help you.
Do they know that?
No, they don't. It's one of those paradoxes that don't make sense until somebody explains it, and when they explain, oh yeah, that makes sense. But intuitively, it wouldn't seem to make sense. But that's it. Any questions? By the way, interrupt any time. Yes, sir.
What about you said the third level. What's the kind of the paradox with that second level then? Right?
Paradox with this, by the time you get to the third level, a stranger's introduced you to a stranger. So Matt introduced me, Russ introduced me to Matt to introduce me to Joe. I don't know Joe and I don't know Matt. Perfect.
Right.
It's total. Yeah. It is just total referral. There's no reference at all.
So that second level is still that little
connection. Yeah. So again, when you look at the research, it's the third level is the best, and then it starts dropping off. So you want to get out to the third level. Next thing.
Right. Why is the third level better than the second level?
I don't know either, but it is. There's actually been
research. It seems like it'd be a lot of dilution between the second and the third.
It goes that way. But the first is lousy.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Sir?
You were good enough to get referred by somebody who didn't know you. So the first contact you had was interesting enough.
Yeah. It also could be in the second level, there's still that residual acquaintance. Why didn't Russ tell me about that? About when you get to the third, there isn't. Next theme. I all want you to go and get a copy of a book and read the book. It's called What Color Is Your Parachute by Dale Carnegie. How many of you have read Dale Carnegie's book? Wow. That's good. Read it again. It's the best book on networking. Read it again. Now, for those of you who haven't read the book, Dale Carnegie, I think, was around in the late 30s. I think the book came out in maybe 1942. I think by maybe 1950, Dale Carnegie was dead. Certainly by 1952, he was dead. So the book is a really old book. It's had ungodly number of printings. I believe I've heard, I can't validate this, that it next to the Bible, it has sold more copies than any book. The title, I've read this book twice, and I believe the title is a misnomer and was probably inserted by the publisher, but not Dale Carnegie. If you read the book, it has nothing to do with making friends. That's not what that book is about. It's about influencing people. This is a book about how do you influence people. And the way you get to influence people is to have them perceive that you're genuinely interested in them. Isn't that amazing?
That's not his book, How to Make Friends and Influence People.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Everybody is tuned to the same radio station. WFM stands for What's in It for Me. They are obsessively concerned with the most important thing in their lives, which is them. And they're going through the motions about being interested in you. And if you know how to work with their obsession with themselves, you can be successful. And if you think it's about you, you will not be successful. It's about as complicated as that. I will tell you two stories about Dale Carnegie's book. Any of you ever read Snowball? It's the semi-authorized biography of Warren Buffett, written with his understanding and okay. And the story of Warren, who knows who Warren Buffett is? Okay. So Warren Buffett is the son of a congressman of the United States who's usually away from home in Washington, D.C., and a really bitch of a mother. Very acerbic, very negative, and telling Warren and his sister it's all their fault why she's unhappy. Just a really not a very nice person. Warren grows up shy, overweight, big thick glasses, and he focuses attention and all that intelligence in one area, which is stocks. Today, he would be called a nerd. And your typical nerd is totally uninterested in anything unless it's in that one area of expertise that he has. And then if you happen to be in that one area that he is expert in, he can be contemptuous because you're so ignorant. How many of you have ever met a nerd? Okay? So Warren Buffett was your typical nerd. He goes to the MBA school at Columbia University, and he reads How to Make Friends and Influence People. And being a quantitative kind of guy, he decides to divide everybody he knows at Columbia into two. One is the control group, where he keeps his normal behavior. Then the experimental group, he uses the Dale Carnegie approach. What's the Dale Carnegie approach? Watch any interview with Warren Buffett. That's Dale Carnegie. Warren Buffett is the best exemplar of Dale Carnegie. He basically is the Dale Carnegie approach in the 21st century. What he found was using Dale Carnegie's approach worked wonders in terms of getting what he wanted done. After he left New York City, went back to Nebraska, what does he do? He signs up for the Dale Carnegie Institute to teach the course. Wouldn't that be cool? to take a course on how to make friends and influence people with Warren Buffett. He was so into Dale Carnegie, he taught that course. In his office in Nebraska are two diplomas that he's very proud of. Graduation from Columbia University and a certificate from the Dale Carnegie Institute. If it's good enough for Warren Buffett, it's good enough for you. What are the messages of the Dale Carnegie book for you? The first one is stop talking about yourself. Stop thinking that a networking meeting is a meeting about you. The worst people that I see in a networking come armed with their resume and prepared to talk about themselves. I really don't care. I'm concerned. You know who I'm concerned about? Me. You're not here. You know, don't talk about yourself. What you should do is when you're calling somebody, say, I am calling you because I heard about you from Brandy. And you know everything about life sciences. You've had so much more experiences in the life science industry than I have. I'd like to get your perspective about what's hot, what's not, what are the trips. I want to learn from you. And stop talking about yourself. It's not about you. Then let that person talk. And here's the thing with Dale Carnegie. Find things about someone else that you really, genuinely, and honestly can say, I really appreciate your perspective. Or I really think you're onto something. Don't do it as a manipulation. But Dale Carnegie, you know, says, and I think it's right, if you can't find something about somebody else to admire, if you can't find something about somebody else that isn't better than you, you're not looking hard enough. Everybody's got something that, in some capacity, surpasses you. So, the interview is not about you, it's about them. Get them to talk about themselves. Nobody wants to be networked to. Nobody wants to be networked to. Everybody wants to be praised. Everybody wants to be appreciated. And that's what networking is about. It's your opportunity to learn from others. I will give you an example. I got a call from a woman. Let's say her name is Marcia. I don't know Marcia. She says, I was talking to Frank. And Frank is somebody in my industry. He says, and Frank says, you are a national guru in the area of executive level careers. And I want to get your perspective about the career management industry. And I'm smiling to myself and I'm saying, she's giving me the same bullshit I tell my clients to do. And while I understand what she's doing, I say, I'd be delighted to see you. Why am I operating at two levels? Well, the first level is I understand what she's doing. She's taking a page right out of Steibel Peabody. The second is, once she said that Frank said this about me, and I accept the compliment as genuine, because I am a national expert in this area, how could I then say, thank you very much, I won't see you? It's contradiction. Once I accept the compliment, I'm bound and determined to see you. Which is another paradox, why it's going to be easier for you to network with strangers than friends. Because frankly, some of the people that you know, you're going to really scratch your heads and say, what is it about this person I admire? Right? But when you go to somebody that you know and they refer you to a stranger, here's the key question, the most important question in networking. Bill, we were talking about, what area are you in?
Finance.
Okay, I'd like to talk to somebody you admire in finance. Who do you respect? Who do you look up to?
Warren Buffett.
And then why? And so then I call Warren Buffett and I say, well, we don't know each other, but here's what Bill said about you. Well, once Warren accepts that I did meet Bill, and that Bill, yeah, it sounds like what Bill would say, how can I then insult Bill by not seeing me? So, the paradox, it's going to be easier to network with people you don't know than people that you do know. Any questions about that? Bill?
I have a question. When you first said, read this book, you mentioned what color is your parachute.
No, I'm sorry. I meant how to make friends and okay. influence people by Dale Carnegie. Yeah, yeah. Not what color is your parachute.
Yeah, okay. I just...
Another theme for those of you who are networking as a verb. Your greatest opportunities, your greatest threats are outside your bullseye. On the periphery of the bullseye. They're not in the bullseye, they're not even in the target zone. Your greatest opportunities, your greatest threats are out there where you're not looking. And the value of networking is to call your attention to the things you don't even see. What am I talking about? There was a... IBM was a major developer of computers. And Commodore comes out with a machine that's sold at Radio Shack. It's a computer. And then Apple comes out with the Lisa. And what is IBM's reaction? It doesn't matter. That's a toy. It's a consumer product. They didn't even see Commodore and IBM as competitive threats. Digital equipment, DEC is the same thing. When IBM comes out with a PC, what is Digital Equipment Corporation's response? So what? It's a toy. It's a consumer toy. We're a business to business. We're in the mid-range. Here's our target, Bull. Not IBM, not Apple. Bad mistake. When Apple comes out with the iPhone, what is BlackBerry's reaction? It's a toy. It's a consumer product. It's not in our target zone. We are a black belt in email. Nobody can touch us in email. Nobody can touch us on the B2B space. It was out of their target zone. By the time they realized it was in their target, it was too late. An example for me, I networked with FEI for many years. And one day I'm at an FEI dinner. I'm sitting next to a guy named Morris McGinnis, who some of you know. And he is, I say to Morris, what do you do? He says, I'm an executive dean at the Sawyer Business School at Suffolk University. And I said, well, isn't that nice? And I start to talk about how great Stibel Peabody is. And he interrupts me and says, have you ever thought about being an executive in residence at Suffolk University? And the answer is, no. But since you brought it up, again, that was an example of something that not only was it not in my it wasn't on a it wasn't a bullseye, it wasn't even on the target. But he brought it up, and I said, why not? And so at age 64, I had a new career. That's the power of networking. For many of us, we were brought up in thinking that the world is linear. And the reality is we like to pretend the world is linear when there's a lot of non-linear things. And networking is an example of a non-linear thing. The way I play golf is non-linear. I can set up, the ball. I can set my feet. I can set the club. Everything is the setup. And then once I hit the ball, I haven't the foggiest idea what's going to happen. It's a non-linear event. But so is this meeting. You knew it was going to be at 6 o'clock. You knew it was going to be at the Newton Marriott Hotel. You pretty much knew who was going to be here and what the topic was going to be about, but you have no idea what's going to happen at the end. One of the wonderful, exciting things about networking is it's a non-linear adventure. You just never know where it's going to take you. It will take you in boring places, frustrating places, and delightful places. I remember once upon a time I got a call from a woman named Jane, and she wanted to hire us to do work at Harvard University. And the work we did at Harvard University resulted in us doing work at five other universities in the Massachusetts area. So that one call from Jane was terribly important. It turns out I had networked with Jane, and she was impressed with something I said or something I did, I don't know what. And so she remembered me and called. I was so unimpressed with Jane that I didn't put it in my electronic Rolodex. And I'm obsessive about doing it. I don't remember meeting her. I don't remember what the meeting was, but she remembered. And again, it's sort of an example of networking as a non-linear event. You just never know. It took me about 6 years of networking to have a 3-minute conversation with Morris McGinnis that gets me a job at Suffolk University. That's what networking is. It's an adventure. Now, let's put these two things together and let's have an exercise. Sometimes I know at these meetings people stand up and say, well, I'm so-and-so and I'm looking for such-and-such. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about this, write this down, and how would you articulate three things about you, and then say, I have these three skills or abilities, and I'm looking for a place to put them to good use, but I lack perspective. And I'm coming for perspective. Not a job, but for perspective. I have three skills, and I lack perspective. I'm coming to you for perspective. Now, why do I say three? And why do I limit it to three? Well, one has to do with cognitive processing abilities. Under ideal circumstances, people can absorb maybe 5 bits of information. But when you're networking with somebody, they're not that interested in you. So they're not going to absorb five pieces of information about you. You're lucky if you got three. So focus on three. Second is, three is a magic number. It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. It's not the Four Stooges. It's not the Five Musketeers. It's not the Six Little Pigs. Three, 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 three. If you look at the structure of every novel, every book, every movie, every TV show, it's basically got three characters. There's a hero, there's a victim, and there's a villain. And what they call a plot twist is, at the end, you find out that what you thought was the victim turns out to be the villain. Or what you thought was the hero turns out to be the victim. So there's a twist. But it's always three characters. And everything is a kind of a variation on three characters. Three, three, three. There's the magic of three. What three attributes, skills, that you have? I'll tell you a story which illustrates the kind of networking that I want you to be thinking about. It's a corporate study, but you can apply it to yourselves. It is also a true story. During World War, there's a company in Boston called Cabot Corporation. How many of you are familiar with Cabot Corporation? Everybody in this room, that's great. Cabot Corporation makes something called carbon black. How many of you are familiar with carbon black? Everybody in the room, that's great. For those of you who are not, carbon black is something that is used, it is added to rubber to give it more resilience. When you were kids and you read the New York Times, remember your thumb would get black? That wasn't the ink, it was the carbon black on the ink that was making your thumb black. During World War II, the Allies blocked Germany's access to the raw materials to make carbon black. So the Germans were forced to come up with an alternative to carbon black, which they called carbon white, and it was made out of silicon. After World War II, Cabot Corporation purchased carbon white. And they said, this is perfect. This is perfect. What we can do with carbon white, because the reason your tires are black is because of carbon black. Now that we have carbon white, you don't have to have black tires. You can go and have a red car and red tires and a blue car and a blue, isn't this cool? So they go to the big three automakers and they say, isn't this cool? Big three automakers say, no, it's not. They go to the tire companies, Goodyear. Isn't this cool? No, it isn't. And so my friend was the product manager for Carbon White. And so he takes a tool straight out of Dale Carnegie. He told me he used the Dale Carnegie book to structure his marketing program. He calls people in R&D around the country and he says, I'm not here to sell. I'm here to ask for your help. We have the rights to Carbon White and it has these three attributes. I'd like to come to your office and show you the substance. I am stuck. I don't know how to apply these three attributes because the things where I thought it would apply don't work. They are in the tires. So he starts going around to R&D directors basically saying, I've got three attributes for carbon white. I need your help. I need your perspective on what to do with it. One of the R&D directors was with a company called Revlon. How many of you have heard of Revlon? So the guy looks at it and he says, it's invisible, huh? Yeah. And we put some stuff in it. It turns out to be a gel, huh? Yeah. And we can make it any color, right? Yeah. Great. I'll take a bunch. And so every time you have a product that is a gel product, the underlying substance is carbon white. And again, the idea was that the zone that Cabot Corporation was looking at was the automobile industry and tires. What actually was the transformative thing for this product was outside the target zone, was up here. And the way they did it was apply the Dale Carnegie technique instead of trying to push something on somebody to say, I need your help. I'm a product, I have three attributes. And I'm looking for perspective about where to apply those attributes. And you want to talk with people who can help you think outside your zone, outside your target area. So think about that. Write it down. What three attributes do you have that would be valuable to an employer or somebody else? And what I'd like you to do is to discuss it with each other on, around the table, and then I'll go around and circulate. All right, so think about three attributes. The three attributes about me that I want you to know. I can do this, 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 or I've had these experiences, and I'm looking for a place where those skills and attributes could be of greatest value. I thought it was in life sciences. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's some other areas. I want you to go around the table, talk with each other, help each other out. Okay? I'll go around and see if I can confuse you.
Or skills that I bring is a market visionary, task focused, and entrepreneurial. So where I'm looking for perspective, I come from the healthcare industry, and I'm looking for perspective on where I can bring that to other markets, not just in a narrow focus that I have in my devices, but that could be all of them.
So would you just repeat your three?
Market visionary, task-focused entrepreneur.
Work for Bank of America, here we have Axel. My personal relationship is called by the way to get that information to the need.
Yeah, I was going to say, nice to see you. Thanks for
coming. My pleasure.
Good to see you. Very good. I ran from work to come here, so I'm a little quick through this.
Are you still in the place?
Still at the food bank, yeah.
Good. Very
brand
new. Yeah, sure.
Good for you.
Just coming up
on
2 years.
How
they
doing?
Very well. I mean, you know.
John?
Mildly
exactly.
It's like just where you want to be.
Are you in any way sort of a bellwether in the economy?
I'm not sure I have the best insight to it. I'm not touching that one with our agency.
You should come in.
Please come visit if you're in town. Free off street
parking.
That's a fun deal. Thank you.
I have a passion for what?
Developing
people.
The recruiter was better than she was very good at drawing.
Now that, I mean, that was that block I was talking about. That doesn't give an indication of what it was created.
Again, from a networking point of view, another way to phrase that is, I've got this, this, this. I've thought this is a logical thing to do. But there's a big world out there, and maybe my focus is too much here. I need your perspective to maybe see maybe some opportunities that I'm missing. Again, you take a book out of the Cabot Corporation playbook.
I'll give it a shot.
So,
from the financial aspect, on how to reach the communication
and those are, you know, like transversal. I wish I could say yes. No, I'm just getting the biggest support. Thank you for coming by.
Man, it's tough. Tornado took out our distribution center or whatever that Wednesday, and I found my summer's on Eagle.
Where was the distribution center?
It would might involve putting together like a syllabus of sorts.
2 days later.
Very detailed out what you can do.
My name is Stephen Whitmer. I'm the Internal Revenue Service. I want to come in.
That one really want to be a company that's for students. And tell people that the students have no clue about
working on this week. And he said, you know, it's the first time I ever made that call and had somebody laugh at the other side of the phone. Because I'd gotten about 7 hours of sleep in 2 nights. So. This is as bad as talking about the years I've ever had.
I've read this guy's resume.
I'm the cheerleader.
Well,
and you speak the language.
You know, I haven't really been coming much. You were enough to.
Another thing you might want to think about.
I left the office. I did emails, left the office, and came here. So.
Thank you.
Oh. So, what exercise have you given?
We're asking people to. We've been talking about. Dale Carnegie's book, How to Make Friends and Influence People. And stop talking about yourself. Ask for help, but you need perspective.
Mm.
Talk about three attributes that you have. That you thought, you know, I've got these three attributes. I thought, you know, being a CFO at a family dominated business is perfect for me, but, you know, it's a big world out there and I'm so close to me. I need your perspective.
Because Gorham says, as Gorham has tried to teach us anyway, you don't ask people for a job, you ask them for advice.
Exactly.
Because obviously, Gorham just does that instinctively, because he's just so gracious. Why would you make somebody uncomfortable? And so, you know, so you just behave politely. So I have to.
Let me. I'm going to the circus.
I found it interesting when I was looking at a lot of dungeons. We went down to New York.
The CFA, the first time I had the Rock Association.
What's your time with that? We're going to move there.
A lot of bankers that bring a chair.
Is this part of the exercise?
The guys that are the underwriters.
Yep.
You know, they'll sometimes make a company pay. Yeah, so if you network with those folks,
they might tell you like 2 weeks that they were that they go to. And then again,
speaking in a world like venture capitalists, you know, who have many teams probably and not staff, because they provide some service, but for their limited capacity, it's probably.
What if you went to the other end and found like companies and said, you know, because you have all the experience seeking out.
So how do I do that and apply that to somewhere outside of my experience?
I think the last thing you mentioned may be the first thing you leave off with. In the finance world, part of our job many times is to explain to non-financial people complex situations.
A lot of leadership.
And if you can do that, there's a great appreciation that other person has. Because you're not talking down to them.
That's a great way.
You're helping them understand it in terms they either understand or breaking it apart so that they can understand it more clearly.
The technology sector, you have to deal with the users, the end users. They're looking for a certain way, a certain tool that they can accomplish their job. And that's where the assessment comes through, where you can bridge between the seller and the end user to be sure that you're not
And I haven't, my experience isn't really doing that in a sales context with the customers, except to some, but it's more with investors and boards, so you can understand what the technology is and how it works and what you can do for them before they can sign off on it.
What's your name again?
Tom Wooders.
Tom Wooders?
Wooders.
Wooders.
Hi, Larry.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Fine. I know. It's more important. How do you think we're doing?
No, it's good exercise.
My name is Bill Burke, and one of the things I take pride in is a problem solver. I put a lot of effort in trying to identify the requirements.
I would say another area of experience that is, I think, of value is lots of experience helping companies understand profitability
their
in terms of
is
products
and they're very
segments,
careful about it too.
They really dissecting their business and understanding where they make money, where they don't, and understanding the cost structure
so you in that
and
particular spot.
Various types of cost analysis.
Yes.
And then thirdly, pretty good experience around mergers and then also
Lots of things.
I'm in a financial division of a larger company that a larger company has had challenges, so everybody's affected by it. To kind of get
connected
to the company. Yes, has grown, has had some successes. Sees a path to that where we're at right now is not necessarily the case.
So you're doing providing value to your company.
Yes,
that's true.
That's exactly.
So let's Bob go.
I'm a relationship builder. A leader that out to get the job done, to often roles, to not the fun roles, but the roles to get it done. I'm also a process person.
Somewhere
he's smiling or something.
More consolidation everywhere.
It's like I want to move out of finance. So now it's like try to develop relationships.
It's interesting that you didn't bring up your back, you know, that part of your background and what you said.
I don't want to see. I think
that is still a skill you use. I mean, like, to someone be able to as an outsider, you may get to do what you want to do because
it seems
you bring
right now
someone
there
with
are
financial background also because of so it gives you the credibility for that last statement back in so I wouldn't run away from the past just to
so use it as
transition to it. So you mentioned earlier when we were talking that you were doing revenue accounting, which is very focused on the numbers, and with those kinds of skills, leadership,
be a good business partner to an operating organization who needs somebody who can help them navigate through their financial forecasts and budgets and understand their revenue stream better.
If you go outside the whole box there, what about if you want to do something with supply chain, something with logistics? It's totally different. But there's a rigor in the financial side that you can transfer over, perhaps. The same rigor in the numbers and putting that together. That links people, that links products, that links lots of problems.
Yeah, lots of relationships to get to where you fix the problem. Maybe get some pieces there.
Is there anything I can do to confuse and frustrate you?
Oh, wow. Very nice. I'm Beth O'Byrne.
Hi, Beth. Nice to see you. Hi, John.
Nice to meet you.
So how's this exercise working out?
Good. I'm realizing I need to get much crisper on the attributes, but I love the thinking. I think it's a wonderful way to bring your strengths and not your insecurities to the table.
Check.
Yeah, you get talking about what you're good at and what you feel confident in.
To think about how you might have a conversation with somebody about that, bring that to light, and throughout conversation I've been thinking about, rather than necessarily starting up a conversation with and thinking about how might you be able to help me, going into it more from how might I be able to help you and make it more reciprocal.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in more detail later on.
I do have one question, though. The way you presented it, that to ask or to come right out and say I'm lacking perspective, I think that made perfect sense in the Cabot example, but wondering if that would kind of show a little bit of uncertainty or lack of confidence
What have you been doing? What was your last job?
Director of finance, number two.
In what industry?
It was in the licensing industry.
The licensing?
Licensing industry. Yes.
And before that?
Before that, I was vice president of finance in a consulting company, web consulting company.
Okay. So, do you have experience in higher education, in museums?
Do I have aspirations?
No, experience.
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
So you, if you look at sort of a functional and industry area, you have that functional talent and skills, but your industry experience has been in the intellectual property side, professional services side. Then there's this whole other area where you don't have experience. There may be areas where you think you know what you know, and there may be other areas where you don't think there's crossover. And those are the areas where you're a finance person and you're pretty sure of that.
Okay, so maybe put it in a little bit more context, like.
Yeah, and in other words, again, let's go back to the Cabot.
Yes.
Cabot is not all over the place. It says we got three attributes, and we're looking where are those attributes be applied.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what they didn't understand was where's the transferability across industries that we never thought about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with you. Where's the transferability of your skills across industries that you either don't know or maybe you haven't even thought about?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But no, you don't want to say I don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah, so you that's have to put it in enough context to make it sound like you're really valuable. Yeah. And there are others that will you know, benefit from your value.
Mm-hmm.
Without being too cocky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I'm talking about what I bring, I usually say I'm extraordinarily effective with bright, egotistical prima donnas. And then I leave it up to them. You know, we go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And you know what? There's certain industries where you have more of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than others.
That's right. Right. Where your skills in helping those people would not be transferable. Right. So.
So I'm not coming across that I'm all things for all people, and I don't know what I can do well. I know what I can do well. I just don't know. I'm open to the possibility that I don't know every place to work. Could
right.
work.
What I like in what you said that is that it's very clear about the type of areas where you're effective. That's why I think about what I had put down for a list. It was very general.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It's not necessarily that I'd be effective in this everywhere.
Well, that's what we were just starting to touch upon with John was saying he was considering the nonprofit world a little bit, or wondering whether or not that might not be a bad place to target. Is that a bit?
Yeah, if you're interested in nonprofit, you might want to talk to Dave over there.
Yeah, Dave Neumar, yeah.
Dave, Dave's been a CFO for, I think, an ad agency, a professional services company, and he's now CFO at, I think, a food bank.
Okay.
But we'll continue this for another 10 minutes. But where we're going for is precisely fuzzy. Precisely fuzzy. In other words, there are certain areas you want to be particularly precise about. So you could say, I am a finance person and I have particular skills in this, this, this. You can be fuzzy, however, in terms of industry. So for example, I was talking with one person where he said, you can be clear that you're a finance person. You can be clear that you've served in these three industries and you know these three industries well. You can also be fuzzy about there may be other industries that you are not familiar with where those three clear skills could apply. Precisely fuzzy.
Nick, I'm going to be leaving in about 5 minutes. Thanks for coming.
So we're Are
you guys going to do this, or more than answering the phone, but actually make decisions and move stuff and get things done.
I have applied to some other organizations.
I'm not type A. I'm going to calmly go in there, get what needs to be done, wind it down, close it up, boom, move on. Now I'm kind of looking on.
I think we have 10
really interesting.
worked for probably the largest turnaround consulting firm in the country. FTI consultant. I've worked for Bezzaro Financial Consulting, which is a KPMG's former business recovery division. The job that I got out of FTI was for a client, not to wind the company down, but to help negotiate their position with banks. Yeah, I mean, if you're interested in that world, we should talk.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to learn more, definitely.
And at least,
if you want a reference on him, call me.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
How about putting on a seminar or something for World Bank? Might have a similar situation. Bringing your skills in a presentation format for a wide audience.
Yeah.
Taking that initiative, whether it's the FBI and the local banking community or whatever.
Or small business owners.
Small business owners.
It's kind of like where those guys fit. They're probably fishing at ACG meetings or chambers of commerce or I see them at the Capital Network. So if you have skills to say, nothing's rosy, I'm sure, in your business.
We'll be stopping in 5 minutes, so I wanted to give you a 5 minute warning.
Actually, I spent 10 years in the business.
Where do you want to go?
Record breaking. Well, just like Alan, you know, when you get to a point where you've got 30 years in one segment, you know that your market value is going to be the most there. When you're on the sales side, you have a book of business and knowledge, and that's what its value is. So that's one opportunity. Otherwise, the sky's the limit.
Part of the MBA program. They also have something that a guy named Mark Galvin started.
Very few of them can afford to hire.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to wind down the conversation, please.
If you see a bold experience, take that pumpkin off and put it out. You just gonna have to know IFRS But yeah, they just took leasing, just took one
Let's get you in right here.
I think it's wrong. It
might have a good rate general applications
to the government. And then go to the audience
I would ask you to sort of wind it down. Could you all stand up and stretch? Come on, stand up and stretch. All right, sit down. That's enough of that. Enough. Was this a useful exercise? Okay. We were at the beginning of the talk. I did a little survey. I said there's two existential approaches to networking. One is networking is something that you do, and then networking is something who you are. And the first part of the talk was really about those of you who define networking as a verb. That's something that you do. Now I want to talk to those who are defining or wish to define themselves as networkers. And I have to say that I give talks to a lot of professional associations around the country. And relative to other professional associations that I have been in, I think the Boston chapter of FEI has more first-class networkers than any other associations I'm talking about. Larry, I'm talking about Mike, I'm talking about you, Jim. I'm talking about, where's Dave? Is Dave's gone? There's Jeff, of course, who gave the talk. These guys are networkers. This is not what they do. This is who they are. And it's part of the fabric of who they are. Now, I'm going to talk about what does it mean for your career to existentially define yourself as a networker as opposed to networking. And then I'm going to use two role models that some of you know. How many of you know Gorham Brigham? How many of you know there's a man named Al Faber? How many of you know Al Faber? I am so glad they're not here. There's a scene in The Godfather, Part 1. Remember the classic scene? A funeral director goes to the Marlon Brando character, Godfather, and he's got this terrible thing. His daughter was raped. And the Godfather says, "I will fix it for you. I will punish this person." And the funeral director says, "But I can't do anything for you." And Marlon, the Marlon Brando character, what does he say?
"There will be a time when I will come and ask a favor."
Right. There will be a time. And then, of course, in the movie there is. And really, the philosophy of networkers as opposed to those who do networking is The Godfather, that scene. What they want, a good networker, and we've got some of the best in this room, is they know the following. Most people, not all people, most people have a balance sheet in their heads. And it drives them crazy when the balance sheet is not balanced. If someone does a favor for me, I will not rest until the favor is reciprocated and the balance is restored. Does that make sense? And so the paradox of networking, for those who are networkers and those who are networkers don't need Larry Stibel to tell them, is the best way that you are going to have career insurance, is to be known in your communities as having access to powerful people who owe you. It's not about being nice. It's about having the brand, having the reputation of having access to powerful people who owe you. Basically, that's the Larry Stibel business model. I mean, that's all I do. Let's look at two examples of fabulous networkers. The first is F. How many of you have actually met Gorham Brigham? Okay, so tell me if you disagree with me. Gorham never talks about himself. He's always talking about you. He's there to help you. He's not there to talk about himself. And as a matter of fact, Gorham has this wonderful 19th century way about him that when you leave the room with Gorham Brigham, he makes you feel it's been a privilege for him to have met you. How many of you have had the Gorham Brigham experience?
And then note.
So don't you feel fabulous meeting Gorham Brigham? And he's so helpful. So what happens to Gorham in Gorham Brigham's career? When I met Gorham Brigham, he was with his no-name bank called Boston 5-Cent Savings. And this was at a time when the banking industry was going through consolidation. Any bankers in the room? No bankers. Okay. That says something. And then he gets a job at Citizens. And what was Gorham's age when he retired from Citizens? 87. He was in his 80s. He retired for health. What was that?
He was 90.
90?
90.
Okay. Again, look at what was going on in the banking industry. Were the banks growing? No, they were consolidating. Larry Fish, in a Boston Business Journal article, joked he reported to Gorham Brigham. Gorham, the only reason that, and the, why did Gorham leave? Because of health reasons. If it wasn't for health reasons, he'd still be at the bank. He was having fun. And he was in absolute no danger of a pink slip. Well, lots of people younger than him, more educated than him, who think you get job security by doing a good job in your job, were fearful of losing their jobs. Let's look at Al Faber. How many of you have ever had breakfast with Al Faber? Okay, almost everybody in this room. I once joked, but it wasn't really a joke, that if there was any justice in the world, they would rename the Newton Marriott Hotel the Faber Marriott Hotel.
At least a restaurant.
Every day, 7:30 in the morning, where's Al Faber? At the restaurant. There's the Al Faber Memorial Table. He's always at the same place. He schedules it in his schedule. Again, when you have a meeting with Al Faber, is it about Al Faber? No. It's about you. He's there to help you. He's going to do what he can to help you. He'll talk about you. He'll talk about FEI. But he's not going to talk about himself, and he's not going to be talking about his job. He doesn't need to. What's the Al Faber story? Last year, the Boston Business Journal and the FEI made Al Faber the CFO of the year. The guy's in HR. He's not a CFO. He's an HR guy. They made him CFO of the year. Does it matter? No. He's helped more CFOs than anybody in Boston. Al just got a job, I think last year. He's now working full-time at Grant Thornton. Anybody know what? How old? This is a legitimate question because I'm not sure. I think he's in his 70s. How many do you know a 73-year-old guy who gets a full-time job at, what is it, the fifth to sixth largest CPA firm? Can any of you say, oh yeah, when I'm 73, I'll get another job, full-time job somewhere? Al Faber can do it. If Gorham Brigham was in good health, he could do it. Why? Because both of them have reputations in their communities, have had access to powerful people who owe them. And that's what being a networker is about. So again, if you want to go beyond being a doing networking, but to about being a networker, you've got two of the best role models in the Western Hemisphere right here at this FEI chapter. Just watch Al Faber. And one of the things that Al Faber does, he schedules it. You know where he's going to be at 7:30 in the morning. It's in his book. The only thing that's missing is the name of the person he's going to be with. You know, don't leave it up to your intentions. Put it in your schedule. Networking is an adjective, and if you have the right brand, you're going to have the closest thing to job security that you're going to get in the 21st century. Now, let me repeat that again because it's important to remember. There are three ways, again, the magic number three, there are three ways that you can make sure that you do not outlive your wealth. The first, die young. Problem with that, not much fun. Second is, hit a home run. Now, you can hit a home run in a number of ways. One is, you come out of the right vagina. Second is, you hit a home run in terms of your investments. Third, you hit a home run in terms of you cash out because you're some transaction. The problem with hitting a home run is it's statistically unlikely. Larry comes from the private equity world, and he knows the statistics about home runs in his world. It's a statistically unlikely event. And the third is the Al Faber and the Gorham Brigham approach, and as you have a reputation as being a network node to powerful people who owe you. And that's actually the least risky and most effective way of making sure you outlive your wealth. And it's certainly more fun than dying. Any questions? Thank you and good night. By the way, if anybody would like a copy of this talk, just give me your business cards. I'll be glad to send them to you.